You know, he was, it seems like he was bending forward when it hit, because it hit the jaw, the throat, and then the bullet continued back and ended up near the left shoulder blade, but under the skin, intact. You know, there was one police officer later that he said he could feel the bullet under his skin and roll it between his fingers, so it was intact. But the bullet that was put forward as proof were in three or four pieces, making it, as what the investigation said, impossible to see if they could match it with the alleged murder weapon. But anyway, when King went down, there was a lot of people rushing up on the balcony. Only a few people started looking for the shooter, because there was like two people in the brochure that seemed, one that jumped down the wall and went north, jumped into a police car, and the police car took off. I would say what has come forward now is that this shooter was Frank Strausser. He's still alive, a Memphis police officer. So if he wants to challenge whatever I say, please meet me in a program and I'll be happy to take a dialogue. Anyway, he was the shooter. The breakdown guy, or the guy that took the rifle, his name was Lieutenant Earl Clark. And he then took the weapon, run to the back door of Jim's Grill, where he gave the gun to Lloyd Jowers, his former partner and the owner of this grill, who then hid the gun and so on, while Earl Clark ran away and got into, either on a scooter or got into, I think it was a green Pontiac or something like that, and took off in there. So, and there was another police car that came right after that. They did not stop that car, but they stopped everyone else afterwards. So the hit team, woof, got out of the way in an instant. But if we talk about Jesse Jackson, one of the things is he came, he was below the balcony when the shots were fired. Then he rushed up, and he's one of the people, one of the four people standing, pointing this famous photo where he's pointing towards, that's where the shot were fired, this famous photo you see everywhere. But that is absolutely not the correct direction from where the shots came. Nobody knew, but the pointing, and it seems like Jesse was the one pointing out, and then the other ones just followed, and that photo was taken. But that was also used to pin the crime on James Earl Ray, instead of pointing down straight into the bushes where the driver and other people saw people move around. But that was some of the people who pointed out these thing that was witness to these the actual shooter have never been heard to this very day.
Unbelievable, isn't it? I mean, you'd think these witnesses would step forward, but obviously, you know, you look at these things, people have been paid off, laid off, and got rid of.
No, but one of them, he said, I'm here, please come and interrogate me. No, not, no one.
Who was that?
I'll get the name to you before. He was standing next to the driver.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I've done like several interviews today, my head is tired.
No worries. Listen, we've got about a quarter of an hour to go, right? So I just want to make sure that you also sent me a little bit of a video audio to play.
Don't worry about that. But what Jesse Jackson did, which was very odd, this was seen by Andrew Young and so on. What he did was he went down and kneeled and put his hands in the blood of Martin Luther King, and then smeared his clothes with the blood of King.
Wow.
Helped him with a story where he said that he was the last one, that King died in his arms and he was the last one that held him and so on. Absolutely not true.
No, so that's quite incredible. Who did that? Was that
Jesse Jackson?
Jesse Jackson did that. That's incredible, because you know what blooding is, don't you? You know, with the Freemason blooding and the hunt, fox hunting and all that stuff. So basically he blooded with Martin Luther King.
But it was also what this blood on his shirt and clothes and so on. He was standing there when he met the press, because he also, I would say, it's almost like a psyop that everyone else went to the hospital together with Martin Luther King you know, his whole entourage.
Yep.
But not Jesse Jackson. He stayed behind, and then he was the only one that met with the media. So it was him in the spotlight from day one. But there is quite a lot of evidence that the last few weeks of King's life, that he was in the middle of finding out that Jesse Jackson was a traitor, and he was very cold towards him. And it seems like Jesse Jackson contacted the people behind this assassination, saying, listen, we got to speed it up. We got to do it now before he exposes me. And if you see his whole appearance also in his last speech, the day before his assassination, where he talks about that he's been on the mountaintop. In that speech, he points out his friend Ralph Abernathy as his best friend. And I would say indirectly, if something happens to me, this is the guy that should take over. But instead, it was Jesse Jackson.
Very interesting, really interesting stuff. I had Larry Pinkney on from the Black Panthers on my show. He was just, you know, he's been in prison for many, many years, and he's in his 70s. And he was stressing as much as possible that the people that took over the Black Panthers when him and many others were put in prison are basically CIA, FBI, totally infiltration, totally organized, wanting killing and wanting black versus white and martial law on the streets.
But that is exactly, it is so sad because it's so infiltrated, you know, every single bit where they could infiltrate, they did it. But I tell you that if we talk about a little bit about Reverend Billy Kiles again, he has been in so many TV programs, so many interviews where he's made a big thing about how he was standing next to Dr. King when the shots were fired. But in one interview, you can find it on YouTube. What he says is he was standing beside Dr. King on the balcony, and then he says, and you can hear it for yourself, only as I moved away so he could have a clear shot, the shot rang out.
Wow.
Only as I moved away so he could have a clear shot, the shot rang out. Mm. I mean, what is that?
Yeah, that's quite a strange thing to be saying, isn't it?
Yeah. But it seems like, according to Judge Joe Brown, who was active in the later part of these different trials, the murder weapon was not the one that we're being shown, which was a Remington Game Master. The actual murder weapon was part of the inventory, the FBI inventory in late 1967. It was later destroyed or missing. It just disappeared. But it was a converted M14. It was a sniper rifle called XM21. It was a native caliber of 7.62 with a special stainless steel barrel, a Redfield 3x9 telescopic sight modified by a company called Leatherwood, with a special subsonic ammunition with a suppressor to reduce the velocity of the bullet, to slow, get it down from supersonic speed down below 1100 feet per second to confuse the sound signal. This is according to this judge. And he said that that shot came from the dormitory cafeteria on the second floor of the fire station, that there is a team there, a two-man team, with a fixed cafeteria table where they put the rifle on and so on. I don't know where he got that from, but in my opinion, the shots were fired from the bushes. Anyway, there is one final thing that is really, really the worst of it all. When you are carrying out these operations, one of the things I keep seeing again and again is that they control the ambulances. They need to control the doctors at the emergencies. They need to control the pathologist for the autopsy, and so on and so on and so on. And in this case, we're back to the same thing. And Russell Atkins, the godfather of the Dixie Mafia we were talking about before, he had a family doctor who was also the chief of surgery at the St. Joseph Hospital in Memphis. This was a Catholic operator hospital at 220 Overton Avenue. And normally there was another hospital when it came to gun wounds called John Gaston Hospital that was specialized in bullet wounds. And they were normally where people were taken with such a wound. But here, this doctor, his name was Dr. Breen Bland. He said in one of these meetings, or several, just make sure that you take him to my hospital. Then I'll take care of the rest. Anyway, so instead of going to John Gaston, Martin Luther King was taken to the St. Joseph's Hospital. And there was a surgical nurse called Lula Mae Shelby. And when Dr. King came in, she and the whole emergency team started helping. They did everything they could to save his life. They put in a catheter to make help his breathing and so on. And then suddenly this Dr. Breen Bland came in, ordered everyone out. He was followed by two men in suits. And sorry about the language, but what he said, stop working on that nigger and let him die. Then he pulled out the catheter and ordered all three of the, ordered everyone else out. But when Lula Mae Shelby was leaving, she heard that all three of these people spat on Dr. Kim while he was still alive. And then, so she turned around, totally shocked, and saw Dr. Breen Bland take a pillow and put over King's face until he stopped breathing.
So this murder after murder, really.
Yeah. And then he was pronounced dead on 7/11. Do you remember these times, the 9/11, 7/11, 7/7, 666? They keep repeating them. And he was pronounced dead 7/11. I don't know if that's just a coincidence, but...
Well, we've learned that there's no such thing, haven't we?
Sometimes there are coincidences, but many times when you look at these type of things, they just repeat themselves again and again. So yeah. I don't know what to say.
No. Well, look, what we've got here now is a guy called Jesse Jackson rolling around the place who should come clean and tell his story, hey?
I tell you, I've done quite a few interviews the last few days, and I think tomorrow or the day after, there's a very, very important researcher and author called Robert Morningstar. He was part of helping William Pepper in this case and so on. And he is publishing an article talking about, I think it's called the Judas, something like that, about Jesse Jackson's involvement, among others. And he is going to publish an article about my part of this whole thing as well, together with that. So I think this is going to stir a lot of things. Because absolutely, for some reason, people in the States don't dare to touch this. So it takes someone from the outside to be able to do it. At least that's what they say.
Well, I think that has to happen. And fair play to you, Ollie, for opening up the old wound, if you like, and trying to stitch it up the right way rather than the stitch-up that actually took place. It's been fantastic hearing about it. It's been shocking, too. Certainly somebody who's been respected throughout his political career, as in Jesse Jackson, should pay the piper, should speak up, you know. There's a lot of unveiling going on, Ollie, and you're part of it, I think, unveiling many, many things, and it's great to hear from you. I've got a question from Carrots. It's nothing to do with Martin Luther King Jr., okay, and what we're talking about now, but very quickly before you go, is quick question. Today is the 19th anniversary of Lady Di's accident in Paris. Yeah. Does Ole believe it was an accident, or was she murdered, even though no car crashed that night?
I don't believe anything. I know it was a murder. It was a very, very cold and brutal murder. And she was, deadly wounded, if you can say that, in a car accident in itself. But she was, they enhanced her inner bleeding and so on in the ambulance. The ambulance stopped for several minutes outside the emergency exit. They didn't even go to the nearest hospital. They waited. And then they went to a totally different hospital where different intelligence agencies, top people from that were waiting. And then they amplified her inner injuries and bleedings so much that she was almost dead when they finally arrived, and she was beyond rescue.
There you are, Carrots. That's the answer. Basically, it was murder.
Total cold, ice cold murder.
similar,
in my opinion.
And absolutely similar to Martin Luther King Jr. Well, obviously we knew that because he was assassinated, but the murder that we were told how it happened isn't how it happened. And thank you so much, Ollie Domingo.
It is this, I tell you, Sean, it's the same. It differs on a street level how these things are carried out. Do you know, it can be triangular fire, it can be a car crashing.
So it's just a template. It's a template.
It is a template.
Yeah.
So this is when things like this happen, you know, for someone like myself, as soon as I start seeing the dots, whoa, wait. And then the official story comes with the same stories again and again and again. I can predict what they're going to say. I can predict what they're going to find. I can very often predict who they're going to point out as the patsy. I can predict the lack of evidence or the way they mistreat and threaten and sometimes kill real witnesses and so on. It's the same. And we need to stop it.
We do. And
so many beautiful people have died and we haven't even, raised our eyebrows. And
absolutely.
People are rotting away in prison as well.
Yeah. I was going to say, not only have people been murdered and assassinated, they've also been character assassinated, wrongly imprisoned, and many other forms of custodial bullshit as well. So look, Ollie Damagard, thank you so, so much. Look, the hour has absolutely flown. We did need 2 hours, really, for questions and answers, etc. it will open up much, much more. And I'm sure, Ollie, you'll be willing to come on the show very soon, and maybe you get a bit of an update on this and take questions
anytime.
Brilliant. Ollie, thank you so much. It was a shame that it's cut to 2 hours, but also again a big thank you for allowing the anti-corruption task force to come on in your second hour, but they're going to have that now. Okay, thanks.
You're welcome. Ollie. I just wish I could have heard one of your poems, but then there you go. Next time.
Do you want to hear a quick poem before you go? Come on, I can't say no to
I want to.
Okay, pick a number between 10 and 90.
And one.
Between 10.
Oh, 10 and 90. Then let's take 39. That was the age of Martin Luther King.
Okay, let's take that. I usually tell people not to have anything that means anything, but hey, let's see what happens. Page 39. Okay, well, guess what? I wrote this years and years and years ago when I ran a club and I got up on stage and I read this out to a bunch of people who were talking shite about me. It goes like this. This is for you people out there. I'm here on my own and your faces just stare. I've been trying to find out about all of your dreams, but they're hidden behind all the lies and the schemes. I only wish my family were here to see the sight of their Irish immigrant son standing in the spotlight. A poet, a promoter, a lover, a sinner, not caring if he comes last, if you were the winner. You can be who you are, who you really are inside. We can close the class structure, that great big divide. You like rock, you like punk, country and western, it's all the same to me. And if you don't like people liking their ways, then you're full of hypocrisy. Now I have to leave you with just one thought inside your head. I hope I achieve at least one great thing before I'm dead. Be brilliant, be ace, be cool, help others when they need a hand. And yes, we can live together in a truly promised land. There you go.
Yay, baby.
so you got your poem fix as well, Ollie. Listen, thank you.
I did indeed.
Thank you so much for coming on. And I'm going to take a wee break now, as they say, because it's needed. Ollie Damagard, thank you so much. And it won't be so long till you're on again.
Anytime.
Fantastic. So I'm going to move on to the next part of the show. Thank you so much to Ollie. But I'm going to play 2 tracks now. One to finish off with Ollie Damagard's section. It's Assassin by Muse, and then I'm going to open up the next part when Joe Ducey and all from the Anti-Corruption Task Force come on the show, and that's obviously going to be I Fought the Law. Back soon. Welcome back to Out of the Bag. This is Sean Maguire live on People's Internet Radio. That's www.peoplesinternetradio.com, where we are seeking solutions. And that was a fantastic interview with Ollie Damagard. Hopefully all that information has been ingested, digested and shared, hopefully. And let's have a look who Jesse Jackson is and what he's working for and who at the moment. Very interesting stuff. Going to move on to the next part of the show now and invite on Joe Ducey and other members of the Anti-Corruption Task Force. Hopefully they're with me now. I have Gary Beattie's number here and I'm on the Skype. So who's there, guys? Is it Gary, Colm, Joe?
This is Joe saying hello, and Colm and Gary are with me, Sean.
How are you doing? Are you well? Welcome back to Out of the Bag, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Home away from home, Sean.
Well, it is a home away from home. And listen, we're just getting a call now, and I'm presuming that's our other caller to the show. So hopefully this is Rosary, okay? I'm just going to add to the group call, okay?
Yep.
So no, let me see if that works. It's a bit of a risk we're taking, but hey. Hello, Rosary.
Hello, Sean. How are you?
Ah, brilliant. Welcome to Out of the Bag. Rosary, I've just finished the first hour of the show, and welcome to Out of the Bag. It's great to have you here. We'll be explaining why and who you are in a minute, but I've only just really opened up to Joe, Gary and Colm the line. So welcome to all of you. Joe, Colm, Gary and, of course, Rosary. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Rosary.
How are you, Rosary? Are you well?
Hi, Joe. Hi, Colm.
How are you?
How are you all?
That's very good in yourself. Sean, I was just saying that we try and do 10 minutes apiece and try and give Rosary the last half hour or so, because her case is quite complex about Dan, her partner.
Okay, well, listen, Rosary, if you want to call in a little bit later, if you want to call in another 20 minutes, you'll be sitting there.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah, would you like to do that and I'll bring you in then?
That would be perfect.
Fantastic. Okay, that's brilliant. And maybe a future date we're going to sort out Skype and everything to make sure, because we know that you've got lots of information for us.
Perfect, Sean. Thanks very much.
No worries, no worries. So in about 20 minutes, give us a ring back and rejoin us, Rosary. Sorry about that.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. See you in a bit. So, Joe, do you want to fire away or who's first?
Yeah, I was just going to lead in. I was in court myself today. It was only for discovery on two charges that the National Bureau of Criminal Investigation was trying to stitch me up on. Mm-hmm. You'll remember when they raided the house 18 months ago or so, or 19 months ago. And they tried, there was no charges brought from the raid itself, but they tried to make out that I assaulted a man called Pádraig Cleary of the NBCI.
Yes.
And that I also interfered with the search warrant. So today we had applied for discovery, or the Gary Doyle order, which wasn't forthcoming. So the judge kind of made a ruling on it today that they have until the 9th of November to give it, or the charges will be can be applied to be struck out. Mm-hmm. But during the course of the debate on the discovery, I managed to get the story in about the Garda baton, which was found on the lawn here last June, the 7th or 8th, the morning of the 8th. And while I was telling the story about it, about the NBCI snooping around private property without warrant or without reason, the super parking attendant, Joe Doherty from Ballina, as I call him, but that's probably an insult to parking attendants all over the country. so I might find another name for him. But
We've got a few for him.
Yeah. He was lying all through denying the discovery. I don't think he's a typical Gardaí, can't tell the truth. But when I was saying that I have the baton and was keeping it as evidence, he jumped up and he says, "Oh, Mr. Ducey has admitted that he has the baton. So he's handling stolen property."
Okay, sorry, who do they steal it off?
Yeah, and he wanted to do me for theft of Gardaí property.
That's just incredible.
Genius.
But I just had to laugh because even though there was probably 6, 7, 8 Gardaí in the room under his command, and you could see them all laughing. Even the judge was smirking, you know.
Yeah.
And he made a complete fool of himself. And it's just sad that this is the level of superintendence in Garda Station.
And what was the result from today's court case?
It was deferred until the set the trial date for the 9th of November in Belmullet. And he more or less said that if I don't get the discovery and explanations as to why they're claiming privilege on certain items, that I may apply for the charges to be struck out.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's what it seems to be now is they've kicked 12 charges until down the road until next July.
Right.
They've kicked two other driving charges down to, I think, the 5th of November. You know, they're all false charges. It's going to be easy proof. There's a conspiracy that everything is malicious. We've no problem.
But will they just be kicking it down the line again and again and again and making loads of money out of it? See, you know, and they're doing this all over the country.
That seems to be the crack. But what we're going to, I mean, I can apply to have them struck out at any stage if they start messing about. But that's probably what they're going to do.
Yeah.
But I mean, I've a mountain of proof on the perjury, the lies, the setup, and everything. So it's not going to be a problem to prove. It's
Everything's documented and verified, really, and you've plenty of witnesses.
That's it, yeah. But so that's it. That's all that happened today. But we have a big day on Sunday, as you're aware of.
Okay.
With the ACT, we're going to a corrupt judge's house. The name is James Hughes in Westport.
Hmm.
And we're going to highlight what he is guilty of in his so-alleged professional career.
Yes.
He's guilty of a lot of crimes, and we're going to publicise it to the people of Westport and hand out leaflets and flyers on what he's done.
And are the whole anti-corruption task force going to be turning up to that, or as many as he can get there?
As many as we can. We don't need that many for handing out leaflets or whatever, but we're making a point, so the more that turns up, the better.
Of course, yeah.
This is the initial, this will be the first peaceful assembly outside the house, so we're going to make a point of it. It's going to be weekly. We're going to continue. We have the next event after that is the White Crosses in Garda HQ, with the names of all the people that have mysteriously died in Garda custody and who've been murdered, and their murders have not been investigated by Garda.
Indeed.
So we're going to go to the Garda HQ and demand answers and leave White Crosses outside. I think that's coming up in or around the 25th, but we'll advertise it as it comes up.
Okay. Well, keep us all informed of what you're doing and where you're going, and because I'm pretty sure that many people who haven't heard of you guys, once they do, will be supportive of you.
That's it. It's just to get the word out there and take this corruption head on. We also have another event happening next Tuesday, the 6th of September. Colm Granahan, who'll tell you about it after a while, and Stephen Manning are up in court. We are because they've been assaulted every time they've gone to court, ACT will be providing security there.
Right.
We're not going to let the Gardaí manhandle us and throw us around anymore. Self-defence is a right. Mm-hmm. It's not a crime.
As long as it stays at self-defence and somebody isn't silly enough to push or poke the Gardaí, you know, because that's something we don't want to be doing, you know.
No, it's usually the other way around, Sean.
Yeah.
But, we're standing hard on what we're fighting. We're fighting corruption. It's epidemic in the system, in the courts. It's right through from the lowly Gard to the solicitor to the barrister to the judge. The whole lot is contaminated and needs to be taken. The whole lot needs to be pulled down because it's beyond repair as far as we're concerned. But we're hoping exposure is the thing that will bring it down. Now, last week I was in Cork with some other members of ACT, which is where Rosaria will pick up there when she comes back on.
Yes.
Her partner, Dan Hegarty, we all witnessed it, was framed in the court and given a 6-month jail sentence and taken away on a district court appeal.
When you say framed, what was the frame-up?
Rosario will probably tell you better, but I'll just tell you what I witnessed in the court, in that it was very obvious it was a predetermined decision. I witnessed the witnesses against Dan, and I witnessed the judge colluding. It was an absolute disgrace what went on. It was all just allegations made by Gardaí, and their word was taken as evidence. Now, we know that the Gardaí are the biggest liars in this country. And it was plain to be seen that the Gardaí were lying and that he was framed. Hmm. Now, again, this is a story which evolved over a land dispute where a certain Fianna Fáil TD, or senator or whatever he was down there got involved. Again, it's the usual links and ties between politicians and Gardaí, and of course, and the judges, and then the innocent victims get caught, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But Dan Hegarty's story needs to be got out there. He's in Cork prison now, doing a 6-month sentence.
And Rosary will fill us in with that. And now I know there's a 20-year corruption sort of battle going on, and all that. So we'll hear about that, and maybe have to bring Rosary on for a special show another time.
I would think so. This is a shocking case of corruption that needs to be exposed. But that's what we're all about, is exposing everything and trying to get it out there.
That's it, and this is the platform to do it if we can, and hopefully there's many more platforms building as we speak.
So that's about all I wanted to get in, because I'll try and leave the best part for Rosary. And I'll put you on to, who wants to go next, Gary or Callum? I'll put you on to Callum next, Sean, and I'll speak through the show whenever necessary.
Right, listen, Joe, thank you so much for that.
Okay, thanks, Sean. Cheers, buddy.
Sean and all, how are you?
Not too bad, Colm. And I suppose I have to ask, because you haven't been well, and I haven't been well myself, and a few others haven't either. How are you?
I'm not too bad. I'm the right side of the sod anyways, and it's a great place to start any day.
I hear you had a few stents put in.
No, well, I have to go for a couple of more, and one to put in, to have to take out and replace it.
Right. Well, hopefully all
that... I'm up too quick.
Okay, well, listen, loads of love to you for that, but hey, we're here to expose. Go for it.
Well, the situation is, I tell you, I really had an enjoyable day today in Ballinair.
Like, okay.
You know, to get a superintendent to make a fool of himself in front of so many. Like, they're not... It doesn't usually happen, but... I wasn't kind of involved today. I was just an observer sitting back and enjoying.
And did any of the ACT people record it or?
There was some of them did, yeah.
Brilliant. Because it'd be great to be able to see that, wouldn't it?
Yeah, well, maybe after the show you might be able to see a bit on YouTube, because when someone is so hilarious within in a courtroom, you know, you need to be able to see it.
Exactly. Making a show of himself on the biggest stage of all.
Well, it's the biggest stage he'll ever be on, maybe.
Exactly.
Unless, as Alice in Wonderland somewhere for kids, he might be doing Santa Claus, although I don't think that they'd let him near them.
Okay, so Colm, you had a great day today. Tuesday, you're up in court yourself.
Yeah, Tuesday we're up for I couldn't tell you what there. There was assaults or breaching, I don't know what were the charges, can you remember?
All I know is that they said you were a criminal, Colm.
I think it's by association, Joe.
Well, yes, that yeah,
if you, Colm, if you go around walking with that Joe Ducey guy, you'll be in awful trouble, so you will.
Yeah, I don't even have to open my mouth, I'm a criminal. Well, that's what the Sheikh Alonis think anyway.
Of course, if they're going to use ad hominem, sure they're going to use it.
Yeah, I think there was reckless with intent and things like that, and violence, you know.
How dare you be thinking for yourself?
This is all what they're thinking now.
Yeah.
And I just tell them to go back and think about Mary Magdalene, because these solicitors, Miss McDerby and a few of them, that has given statements against me that they were in fear of everything and all this old nonsense that they go on with, you know, the big words that they use, and yeah. Never seen the likes of it in a court before. Well, I'd well agree with them. They never seen the truth being exposed or the lies that they were telling being exposed, and they'll see more of it again next Tuesday.
It's brilliant, because of people like you guys. I mean, you know, they've been getting away riding roughshod over the Irish people through the judicial system for years, and now with people like yourself and people knowing a little bit more, they can't get away with it anymore.
And don't forget that Cathy McDerby there, that has made a statement against Colm. People want to go online and check out the history of McDerby solicitors in Ballinrobe. Where there were scam artists, they robbed people's accounts, they represented both sides of a case, you know. Anything that can be done that was corrupt, they did it. And Cathy McDerby, who was a practicing solicitor at the minute, worked in that firm while all that was being done.
Right.
And this is the standard and the morals of the solicitors that's there, you know.
There's a few more of them there. I won't mention an awful lot about them, but you know what's said in the Bible, that he who is free from sin... throw the first stone.
Indeed.
And I'm thinking that there'll be a few sins to be answered from Joe McKinnon right down to the end. You know, I'll have the right to question them, and I will expose their character. I'll be told that we're not here to, that they're not on trial, that I am.
Right.
I'll be able to, as the fellow says, distinguish